are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Oui.
Hello, one and all, and welcome into the Fundamentalist Podcast, where heavy metal is the law and court is always in session. I'm your host, dual guest, joined, as always, by the ever-affable and sometimes inebriated Richard Donahue. How are you doing, sir?
Doing fine. How about yourself?
I'm fan-fucking-tastic. Thank you very much. On today's edition of the podcast, we're going to be discussing the appearance, or lack thereof, I should say, of Black Braid at the Midgard's Blood Festival, as well as the return of Job for a Cowboy and how me and Richard are partying like it's 2014 all over again. We'll also be talking a little bit about a recent show that Richard got to attend, as well as reviews for the latest releases from Mutoid Man, Horrendous, Godthrim, and Urfaust. All this and more on the Fundamentalist Podcast. Thank you, one and all, for joining in. As I said earlier, joined by Richard Donahue. Let's get right into the festivities. 10 years ago, there was a certain band called Job for a Cowboy that released a pretty killer record called Sun Eater. It was quite a departure from what they had originally been putting out, at least the type of death metal they had been putting out, which quite a departure from the death core that they started off making all the way back in the Gloom EP days of, what was that, 2008, 2009? I was like
somewhere 2006, I think, actually.
Yeah, I was somewhere around a senior in high school or a freshman in college when Job for a Cowboy.
Fucking really... MySpace, bro.
Yeah, exactly. The Entombment of the Machine days, way back in the day. Anyway, Job for a Cowboy obviously evolved throughout their career, and they went from the deathcore sound that they first burst onto the scene with to a rather refined form of death metal, Demonocracy. Fantastic record. And yes, lastly, the very last release that they put out, Sun Eater, was kind of a proggy death metal release, very much slowed down from the death metal that they had started to put out of the last couple releases. And then they just disappeared. I guess maybe the finances weren't kicking it for the band and they just disappeared. They were gone. Over the years, there had been multiple false starts or teases or maybe just outright lies about the band coming back out of retirement. But nothing ever came to fruition. Until this last week. And finally, after almost 10 fucking years, Job for a Cowboy have returned with a single called The Agony Seeping Storm. And surprise, it's fucking good. The Agony Seeking Storm gives a slice of our upcoming concept record, says their vocalist Johnny Davey in a press statement. Regarding the video, the band collaborated extensively with director Hunter Lumar, while our bassist Nick Shenzilos co-directed. The concept was inspired by a close friend who embarked on a relentless quest for profound enlightenment through the incessant abuse of hallucinogenic drugs. Hashtag Hunter S. Thompson would approve.
Yes.
Richard, what do you think of this new single from Job for a Cowboy? And was it worth the 10-year wait for them to return?
Well, I do feel it's a very good song to me. It's not like holy fuck tits, like I'm stoked by this record. Well, like it's more standard Job for a Cowboy.
That's interesting you say that. I think it's actually pretty cool. I think it sounds actually pretty different from most of the stuff they've been putting out. It sounds different from Sun Eater. It's actually a nice little combination, I think, of like albums like Demonocracy and Sun Eater put together. There's that proggy element that was really apparent on Sun Eater, but it also has the pace and the death metal energy that was really apparent on albums like Demonocracy.
I will say I love the bass. I love how the bass, there's room for it to breathe. It's like really up the mix. That I do like a lot about it. So maybe the drum sound, I think that the mix turn off to me. The drum sounds a bit too overproduced, too like almost like pop metal sounding. That's, I didn't care for that, but I did enjoy the bass and shit. It's a good song. But usually, yeah, well, a lot of these records with the singles, usually like the mass song and the rest is better, like with the new Cal Decap, We Eat Our Young. I didn't care for that song. But other songs I record enjoy a lot fucking more. So that's why I'm not just going to write it off. But it should blow my socks off. So
Maybe not, but I don't really recall the lead single for any of their past couple of records, whether it was Rumination or Demonocracy that I've mentioned a couple of times. I'm not sure really any of the lead singles really blew my socks off, but really none of the lead singles on most of these death metal records are really like incredible, I would say, at least not on the first listen. You kind of have to see where they bed into the record as a whole. I seem to recall on this podcast, I think it was you who was bitching about the lead singles off Nightbringers, the Black Dahlia Murder record. I think it was the title track Nightbringers itself and Kings of the Night World. And then as when the record came out, you saw where they bedded in on the record and how they overall contributed to the flow of the album. The true appreciation for those tracks came through, shall we say?
Oh, definitely. Of course. Yeah. I remember being totally turned off by the single. Like, this is it. But then, yeah, the flow of the track list, yeah, it makes a lot more sense. So that could be the case with this song too. So we love to be proven wrong. So I'm not opposed to it.
I, for one, am just really glad for a band that I really love that I thought was that really grew out of that deathcore genre, that deathcore boom in the mid to late noughties, I guess you could say. They, like Black Dahlia Murder, got tagged with this deathcore label that wasn't necessarily fair, I think. And whereas Black Dahlia Murder, I think, was more rightfully branded with the melodic death metal label later on, more true to what they actually sounded like, Jobber Cowboy never really shook that deathcore tag, even though albums like Rumination and Demonocracy, I don't think were really deathcore at all. They were straight up death metal.
No, not at all. They're actually a curious case where like the elitists and the underground type people are bitched about them all. You're a deathcore, but you should be more a death metal band. And then they became what the underground wanted them to be, and then nobody gave a fuck about them. That's a kind of like they did what the quote fans wanted, and then like the support dried up. I've never quite seen that in a popular extreme metal band, like doing what the quote unquote fans are like, whatever wants to do, and just disappearing off the map. Quite odd, honestly. Never seen anything quite like it.
The next story we're going to be bringing to you today comes to us from Norway, or rather, is based in Norway, but also includes a certain fundamentalist podcast darling band, Black Braid, Native American themed black metal band from upstate New York. Was recently booked to play the Midgard's Blood Festival in Norway. However, once they got there, they landed themselves in, shall we say, hot water. Black Braid was forced to leave the festival with organizers citing, quote, excessive intoxication as a reason for the eviction. However, in an Instagram post, Black Braid, shall we say, disputed this version of events, writing, "We have been asked to leave Midgard's Blood early because of the color of our skin. I'm so sorry to the fans that came here to see us. I was really looking forward to playing a flute set at the bonfire tonight. I've been forced to cancel it, unfortunately. I hope our fans can understand. Thank you to everyone that came here to see us from the bottom of my heart. I wish the staff here shared the same values as the beautiful people that have attended the festival. I promise we will return to Norway one day to a festival that can appreciate Black Braid for our true worth, regardless of our nationality. We shall return," which set the stage for some rather racially charged drama. However, that was not the end of the story. The very next day, Black Braid posted to their account, and good on them for this, a bit of a clarification, writing, "Regarding the situation at Midgard's Blood last evening, unfortunately, there was some unfortunate miscommunication between the festival organizers at the security regarding the actions of one of our band members, whom momentarily laid down in a sitting area. While the festival organizers of Midgard's Blood were helpful in handling this situation peacefully at first, unfortunately, the company handling the security re-escalated the situation a couple of hours later in the evening, and this is when the band was officially removed from the festival. While we were originally informed following the initial incident that we could overlook the situation and that the band was still welcome at the fest, this sentiment was seemingly not communicated to the security staff elsewhere at the festival. It was also at this time that the other Native members of the group who were unaware of the situation were being told that they needed to leave by security as well. At multiple times yesterday, security was not able to tell the difference between the Native American members of the band, leading to further confusion and misunderstanding on both sides. While we have wanted to give the benefit of the doubt in terms of racism, we have unfortunately had continuous negative interactions with both security and a handful of festival goers. The anger, which negatively impacted our actions in the moment of this altercation, was fueled by many different interactions, which finally got a tipping point here. The situation was handled poorly on all sides. I apologize for my behavior in the situation, especially the spitting situation, which you notice wasn't mentioned in the last post, and to the fans who have been upset by the situation, and to the festival staff who tried to handle the situation with security before it got out of hand. I was livid with the treatment we were receiving and did not handle myself in a responsible way whatsoever. I let my anger get the best of me and my actions were out of line. We are grateful for the opportunity to play in Norway and hope to return one day under different circumstances. So obviously very different statements. One was probably obviously in the heat of the moment posted, maybe even under the influence of alcohol, at least, especially if you listen to the festival organizers seeming version of events, since they were citing intoxication for the reason that they were asked to leave. And the second message, which seems to acknowledge fault on both sides. There is obviously the common thread that there is a little bit of underlying maybe racism, whether intentional or not, on the part of the festival organizers, the festival security. And in the second message implied even other festival goers who were there at Midgard's Blood Festival, not least of which just not being able to tell them apart. Obviously, American listeners will know all about the stereotypes of certain racial groups not being able to tell other racial groups apart, even if you can look at them in the face. So interesting situation all around, a real shame. I know if I was there at Midgard's Blood Festival to see Black Braid, who, as listeners of this podcast will know, was a big darling of me and a lot of people who contribute to this podcast, I'd be upset if I'd gone there to see them and then all of a sudden they could not play. Having not been there, having not seen the situation, it's difficult to say who is truly at fault here. I'm glad that the dudes in Black Braid could acknowledge some fault, because at least it seems more, shall we say, believable that maybe there was miscommunication, considering the fact that you have a band from the United States and a band from Norway. Maybe there's a language barrier. Maybe there's a bit of a cultural barrier. Maybe what is considered acceptable in one place or amongst one group of people is not considered acceptable in others. I don't know. Tough to say. A real shame all around. What are your thoughts?
Kind of hit the nail on the head. It's not really, since none of us fair, we don't really know what happened. But from what I've heard or other stuff read, basically one of the guitarists was apparently hammered, laying on one of the burial grounds, and the festival organizers didn't take too kindly to that. And they started moving. That's when the spitting happened, all that sort of stuff. So
there was that acknowledgement in the second message, and there was no acknowledgement of spitting on security, spitting on what
you said,
like, is this Midgard's Blood Festival taking place on like a Viking burial ground or somewhere? Like you said,
yes, it's a very like Viking themed folk type festival. That's the whole thing. I actually just heard about it a few months ago. I looked into it. So yeah, that's kind of the theme of Viking folk, culture, heritage, that type of shit. That's kind of one of the themes of the fest. So that might have been why certain parts of the attendees were not happy about that. And then Black Rake, the whole racism angle, which could have been true, could not have been true, depending on circumstances.
How dare you pee where we're sending 30-euro fucking Viking mead drinking horns? That shit is sacred, bro. Or something like that. That's all I can fucking imagine.
Yeah.
30 minutes later, Amon Amarth is yelling, row, row.
Oh, dude, this shit's so fucking cringe. I can't, it disgusts me on multiple levels. Oh, you can pay me to go to an Amon Amarth show now. I like them up to throwing on our side after that, dude. could pay me to go there. Fuck no, dude.
They're rolling in their graves. They're rolling in their graves. Anyway, we just wanted to talk about that story just because it was an interesting happening, especially since Black Braid posted so much about it. It's a real shame, especially that the fans who went there to see them. It's also a real shame that fucking they received such shitty treatment from some members of the Midgard Waltz Festival going community. However, if it is this super pagan Viking themed fest, it only seems natural and logical that there's going to be some assholes mixed into that crowd.
Some bad apples. Yeah, of course. You know.
Yeah, given there's some certain, shall we say, political subsects that have attached themselves to these Viking and Aryan, this Northern European pagan culture. It only seems to reason that at a festival of that size that there'd be some dickheads. And unfortunately, Black Braid ran into them. Hopefully they don't in the future, and hopefully they can come back over here in Europe and play to some crowds that really appreciate them. I certainly would love to be in that number when they do. Before we get into the reviews, Richard, you went and saw a show, hopefully without any of these aforementioned dickheads. Why don't you tell us about it?
No. I actually went to 2 in 1 week. The first one I went on two Tuesdays ago. I went to Manchester, Hampshire to see Storm Ruler and Swallow the Sun in a fake Tushka, the Bart-fronted Metal Blade approved version of the band, the official one, quote unquote. But I was right there for Storm Ruler and Swallow the Sun. But Storm Ruler were kick ass. This is my second time seeing them. Since I saw first open for Rotting Christ over 2 years ago, and put on a really good set. They played a lot off the newest record, Sacred
Rites and Black Magic, some shit like that.
Yes,
I'm pretty sure they probably played the exact same set that I saw them play over here with Dark Funeral and Cannibal Corpse.
Actually, I talked to Nick, who also plays Savage Mass. So they actually changed their setup a lot, apparently. From that tour to this tour. So, yeah. I recognize quite a few of the songs, and I really enjoyed it. And they got a really good crowd reaction as well. So I ended up buying the album. So spun out a couple times. I like it a lot. So I say the intros, but it'll become really accessible, especially the second half of the record. But it's still really quality, melodic black metal that Google has approved of, and I can also approve of. And this was my third time seeing Swallow the Sun. And I have to say, overall, I thought it was their best set that they have done out of all of them. They played 3 or 4 off the new record. Moonflowers 2021, new enough. But they played Woods Breed Evil, Swallow, the top track New Moon. Bunch of songs I'd never actually seen them play live before. And Miko sounded great. Though I do wish, I'm not sure... You know, that's just a style live where he kind of sings a little understated or just lower volume where his screams are louder than normal. Maybe that's kind of his thing. But they sounded great. Great time. I left for fake Tusha because fuck that bullshit. And then
you actually kind of missed out, man. I get your hangups and your qualms regarding this incarnation of Batushka that is running around touring and how they kind of jobbed the original member. And the original songwriter. However, they're still a good incarnation. At least live.
It was also Tuesday. I had work like 6 o'clock as well. So plus, while the sun was so great, those are really high. I don't want to disappoint. It was just so good. I want to get the fuck out of there.
Well, if you get a chance to do it, I wouldn't leave. Batushka is actually really good live. They're, like I said, qualms aside, they're good.
No, actually, that's the second time they played that venue. And it's called the Jewel in Manchester. It's the second time they played there, like, past year. So they come back this year, too. I'll think about it, depending on the day. And that following Saturday, I got to see Sacramentum for the fourth time the past 2 years. It blows my mind. I went to Melissa Payne High School and thought I'd never see it less than 4 times in over 2 years. It's been pretty great. But I got to meet their vocalist. And getting to sign my copy of my favorite record, there's The Coming of Chaos, as well as the original guitarist got an awesome picture with them. They put in a great set, of course. They had Far Away from the Sun, as per usual, start to finish. But they did play Dream Death and Awakened Chaos, Off the Coming of Chaos, which was the first time I'd seen them play songs off that. So I was very much ecstatic for that. And even actually got a drumstick at the end of the set, too. I was able to get that signed. So I talked to their drummer at their merch sale. It's a sign. He was saying out they're doing a tour again next with US and going to play a lot more Off the Coming of Chaos. Well, I was so elated. I nearly lifted the man like off the fucking ground. But great time, though. Great show. That's actually the first show that me and my son and my wife would do together as well since I moved up here. So that was really cool. Good times. And that's all the shows I've been to since then.
Very nice. With that being said, we will move on now into the reviews section of the podcast. We're going to begin with our review of the latest Urfaust record entitled Untergang. For those of you who don't know, Urfaust comes to us from the Netherlands. They've been active since 2003. Urfaust was named after Goethe's unfinished interpretation of the medieval German Faustian tale, eventually turned into Faust, as we all know. Their first record came out in 2004, culminating, in my opinion, with their magnum opus entitled Ritual Music for the True Clochard in 2012. And now they are back once again in 2023 with Untergang. Now, I mentioned this band a couple of episodes ago on a What We've Been Listening To segment, and this release actually came out of nowhere. It just kind of dropped on my Spotify, and I was rather surprised. It came out the day before my birthday, a little bit of an early birthday present. And so I was really excited, one, to have a new Urfaust record, and secondly, to have one that we could talk about here on the podcast and serve as a sort of a baptizing moment for, at least for Richard at this point. Obviously, Bogrovich is no longer with us here on the pod, but Richard, give me your initial thoughts on this fucking atmospheric black metal masterpiece that is Untergang from Urfaust.
Well, so when I first played the first song of Untergang, I thought it was Mike Shrek and Yabu. Well, at first, like, so I was sort of super blown out. I had to actually look good of a talent to look up, like, is Mike Shrek, you guess vocals on this? He does not. So,
and regarding the vocals, I would say lyrically is not a, is not a point of focus for this band.
It's very much the atmosphere,
a vocal filter. The vocals are almost indecipherable, I would say, at times, especially for English speaking audiences, because I do believe it is in German as well, even though they're a Dutch band. In German, really heavy vocal filter, and it's like this wail. It's like if you were to like be stumbling around in the woods lost and you hear this dude like in agony, sort of ritualistic agony in the woods.
It's also mixed in the back of the mix as well. So you mainly have guitars and drums and bass, and you have the vocals in the background. So yeah, once I went back, I was doing a couple songs off the record you just recommended. I kind of got, that was kind of shtick. So I could kind of look past that. But I found it's very much a very moody, very atmospheric, but and I don't mean it's a bad way, where you can't really necessarily pick out a song or two. It's one of those things where you want to listen to the whole album, get the full experience from it, because you just pick a song or two, you're not going to quite get the whole vibe and emotion they want you to feel.
I would agree that it's really hard to pick out two songs. However, there is two that I would recommend, particularly off this record. Well, three. The very first one, Untergang, which is the title track. But there's also Reliquienstaub and Vernichtung that I would also recommend as well. This record is actually really reminiscent of that one that I really love, Ritual Music of the True Clochard. And that's why another reason why I'm really a big fan of this. It's so gritty. It's so evil. It's got fucking atmosphere for days. But it doesn't stay around any longer than it needs to. This record is under 40 minutes. I think of another band that I love. This is not a criticism, like Passage de Ivor, another atmospheric black metal band. I think their last record was an hour and 20 minutes. This one is 37, but it gets across the atmospheric black metal vibe, I would say, even better than Passage d'Ivor does. Obviously, in a different...
Digestible.
Yeah, digestible.
Digestible.
And in a different way, but everything about this, like the riffs, there's these super subtle harmonies that really will make the hair stand up on your, gives you goosebumps. Richard, you said off the air that it's like seven tracks that are all the intro to an album. And what I took from that comment was that the intro to an album is there to like really, I guess, build you for what's coming when it comes to a metal record. And yeah. So you're always on this constant state of edge, this state of excitement and anticipation. And that's kind of what a ritual does at the end of the day, right? It's got you ready and prepared to receive whatever the band is trying to give to you. And yeah. From track one to the very last one, you're there ready to receive. If you had a criticism, maybe there's no like overwhelming, like this, we've just reached the mountaintop moment. But I would argue that it's kind of the whole record is we've reached the mountaintop moment.
Yeah.
It wastes no time in bringing you into the world. And that's just where you are for 37.
I think the trio, the OP3 trio songs, the Untergang, Holen Cosmos and Lear, I think those are great, you know, back-to-back songs, because Holen Cosmos get a bit more doomed out, and then Lear kind of brings in like this creepy melody, and then 4, 5, and 6, I think honestly could probably just make one song, that's my opinion. And then how the last song, Abgrund, kind of brings the melody back from Untergang and puts it into that. So like Dream Theater, and I used to do that along the early records, which I thought was really cool. So the fact that was on this record too, I very much enjoyed. But a lot of this atmospheric black metal stuff isn't really my cup of tea, or it's overly long. But this I thought was a really good starting point, especially for someone like myself. I'm finding a record, I'm like, cool. Like I get what they're trying to do. It's digestible. You can listen to it multiple times in a day and not get boring. And I think that's good for that genre, because it's very hard to get into genre, I'd say, much like even funeral doom or something like that.
I'm glad you mentioned that returning theme, that recurring motif, if you will, that comes back from Untergang, because it definitely does. And I'm also glad that you picked up on the underlying doom metal influences that are all throughout this record. Even though it is an atmospheric black metal record, there are other metal genres that kind of poke their head out here and there in the Untergang sound. Doom metal is most definitely one of them. Slight Electric Wizard vibes every now and then. In that really dirty, fucking fuzzed out sort of way. Clean edit. I'm a huge fan of this band. I'm a huge fan of this record. And I'm just hyped that I got more Urfaust. I was a little under the impression that the band was kind of defunct, or at least was going to be taking an extended hiatus. And even if this is the last one that we get for a long time, I'm glad that it delivered on all fronts from what I want from an Urfaust record. Once again, since there's no more Bog and there's no more ratings out of 3.3, just we're both going to give a rating out of 5 and average them together. I'm going to give Urfaust Untergang a 4.3 out of 5. What's your score, Richard?
But apparently this might be the band's last record, because they just put a eponymous Instagram status to Urfaust 2002 to 2023, so I think the band might be broken up.
And if you go on Encyclopedia Metallum, it says defunct. So if this is how they go out, then at least they went out on top.
Pretty awesome. I wish more bands put out a record of this quality as the last one. But I very much enjoyed this record a lot, and I'm going to go with a
3.8. So Urfaust Untergang gets an 8.1 from us here at the Fundamentalist Podcast. Let's move on to one of your picks, Richard. We both got to pick two records on this review episode. Do you want to do Horrendous or Godthrim next?
That's a good one before I get the fucking disappointment.
Okay, so obviously we're going to talk about the new one from Horrendous, Ontological Mysterium. I'll let you take it from here. Introduce us to this fucking masterpiece.
Well, I got into Horrendous all the way back, their second record, East at East, which was, I believe it was 2011, back when they were on A Dark Descent still. And it's just, that record blew me away. Like, it was brutal, but the songs are catchy. There's melody. The guitar playing was fucking sick. There's still that little bit of progressiveness, but not like to say how new or enslaved it is. And ever since then, they've kind of been creeping more and more into that style, a little more progressive with Fall Out Banneretta, which is still got the heaviness, but definitely going the longer, kind of weird, kind of ebb and flow style of songwriting, you know, high mountains and peaks. And I actually went back and listened to all the records from Banneretta, this one, and their growth is honestly logical and makes sense. They do anything you didn't expect, especially listen to an Idol, their last record, 2018. They just kind of went further in that more progressive direction.
It's funny you say that, because I skipped Idol, and I remember Horrendous being a much more straight up death metal band. So when I heard this, I think I spoke to you and I said this band actually has a lot of like really progressive, like heavy thrash vibes, like prog death metal. Yeah. Very much not what I was expecting when I heard we were reviewing the new Horrendous.
Oh no! Like from the Chills of 09, that was a straight death metal record. Ever since, they get more and more progressive. That's one thing about this record that caught me off, kind of off guard. The first two songs of track two, Cryospolia, The Archaeology of Dawn, and track three, Neon Leviathan, almost start off with this like old school metal, like thrash vibe with opening riff, while goes this chaotic, you know, heavy, melodic, like it's throws all this shit at you, but it still kind of works. So it's almost like a train, like it's going fast, things will go off the rails, and it somehow fucking does it. So I love the energy on this record. I think it's a really phenomenal one, the strength of the album.
Fantastic energy indeed, but I will push back to you. I never really got any sort of chaotic vibe from this. I kind of thought it was very a well-ordered piece of music here. From start to finish, I thought it was like very much a band, very much a control of what they wanted you to think and what they wanted you to feel as far as what they were giving you. Every note seems very controlled, as any sort of progressive / technical piece of death metal should. And I thought this was very much in that vein. Also, one piece I want to say, the bass guitar, like in any good prog and technical death metal record, is very prominent here and yes, very fucking cool. I'm a big fan of the bass on this record. The mixing as a whole, I think, is done really well on this album.
On this record here, Matt Knox does a lot of the vocals on it, which I'm not as big a fan of. I prefer Damon Herring, who used primary vocals on their other albums. But Damon Herring is the one that mixed and mastered this record. He has his own studios in New York, I believe. He also did the last Desolate Shrine record. He does a great job mixing and mastering. Is one of my favorites of past couple years when it comes to production.
Standout track for me on this record in particular is track number six, The Cult of Shad Awa. Very Lovecraftian vibes going on over here. I was also a big fan of the final track, The Death Knell Ringeth. A little bit of a more slowed down, more deliberate pace on that one. And then also, like you, track number two, Chrysopeia. Huge fan. Wasn't really expecting this whole vibe from the record, this very heady, mature, progressive death metal record. Like I said, I was expecting very much a death metal album, and that's not at all what we get. And I was very pleasantly taken aback by this. I'm going to give it a 3.8 myself.
Yes, I very much like a lot. Actually, one track I want to call out is the instrumental track, track four, Aurora Neoterica, which honestly reminds me of some straight like shrapnel record shit from the 80s. Like, it's moody, but it's just really shredding. And that's actually one of the things that even throughout all their eras, the guitar player is always phenomenal. It was shreddy, but with melody and feel to it. It's not just soulless fucking endless arpeggios and shit. And one of the great strengths of this record, though, I do is the brutality of the older shit. I'm not going to lie. But this has been their trajectory. And I'm on the train so far. So we'll see how long, but I think it's an awesome record, and I'm going to give it a 4.0.
So Horrendous's latest release, Ontological Mysterium, gets a 7.8 from us here at the Fundamentalist Podcast. Let's wrap up Richard's suggestions on the pod. Let's go ahead and go with his second suggestion. That's the latest from Godthrime. I don't know. Features former members of My Dying Bride and Valenfire. Sounds really killer, right? Richard, tell us about it.
Let's tell how you're not wrong, sir. Well, if you remember, you know, if you're a longtime listener, back in the days of your 2020 in the pandemic years, God Thunder Record Reflector is actually my number four of that year. Fantastic record. And they had an EP, The Vast Asylum, which is a phenomenal song. And so I was waiting for years for this album. And, you know, as I heard their studio, my expectations were pretty high, you know. And I hate to say this, but they've unfortunately fallen to the old sophomore slump. And pretty goddamn hard, I hate to say.
Yeah. When you first suggested this in the Slack channel, when we were discussing, I was trolling you a little bit, just kind of shitting on the record off the first track that I heard from it. I think it was called Echoes. And then this morning, when I was working out, I was listening to the record, and the first two tracks afterwards, like, there were some hiccups within the tracks. It was like, okay, I totally misjudged this record. I was talking mad shit. There was really no reason for me to do that. This record actually might be pretty cool. And then after track two, this album makes the listener descend into what might be the worst headspace for any metalhead when listening to a record. And that's just fucking boredom and apathy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a huge shame.
When it comes to doom metal, that's one of the things about it, though. Like, you have to be very fine about it. It's a very fine line with the, like, badassery and just boring plotting. The fortune much of this record.
There is. And there's some great parts that remind me of, like, the best of Electric Wizard. It's, like, the type of doom metal that you think of, like, you're watching a planet break apart. And, like, oh, the majesty and the pain and the sadness. But then they're... any sort of momentum that the track gets is broken up by, I guess, a confusing creative decision. Like, no, the clean female vocals, every time they come on, it's like a yellow light for those of you not from the United States. It's like the caution light here in the United States. It's basically telling you to slow down. Like, the red light is about to come. You need to stop, or at least come close to stopping. And that's basically what this track, every time the clean female vocals come in, the momentum of the track is outright halted, which is a huge shame because there's actually some really cool guitar riffs in here. I think of the very first track as Titans, as well as Devils. Towards the end, there's some fantastic riffage. Like the last 3 minutes of As Titans, basically as it comes out of the female vocal section, regains the momentum. And you wonder why you ever left it to begin with. Devils is also really cool, minus the fucking horrific and cringe-worthy inclusion of the attempted quote-unquote creepy children's vocals towards the end.
And in the band's defense, the last 20 seconds of the song. So it's out of the middle or anything like prominent. So
20 seconds too many.
But, yeah, unfortunately, this record that today starts us strong. I like As Titans. You could take probably shave a minute or two or 3 minutes off the song. I have the killer song. Devils, I think, is a solid song. The third track, Echoes, I'm actually a big fan of. The melodies stuck in my head, honestly, all week since I got the record.
It is. And, it is. But it goes downhill after Echoes. Like, really, really hard. Like, it goes really...
I like Obsessed Regress, personally. I like to trade off to the females and... The vocalist, I like that myself. You know, you might be a fan. I kind of dug it, but after that, though, it's a straight nosedive. So
it's not that I dislike Obsess and Regress. I just think that each track after Echoes is a cut below the one that came before it. So Echoes was good, but that was like the last bit of, I guess, the really quality material that's on their record. And don't get me wrong, I had creative gripes with the first three tracks. But Obsess and Regress... less than the first three. Unseen, Unheard would have honestly been better left unseen or unheard. There's really nothing
I can say about
that song. And then I was telling Richard off the air, dear listener, that the record honestly could have ended after Unseen, Unheard. Like, I was done. And then the last two tracks, Follow Me and Pictures Remain, like, I was firmly in the throes of apathy and boredom, and Follow Me is damn near 13 minutes. There's nothing worse than being done with a record and you have 20 minutes left to go. Holy shit.
Honestly, Follow Me, if Cut Down could have been a great 7 or 8 minute song. That could have been a solid 7 or 8 minute song. But wasn't there. And did you list the bonus track in perpetuum eternal?
I did not. Is it really a bonus? A bonus is something you want. I was done at track six.
I will say it is better than the two tracks that precede it, but I'd say not by much. It's like 6 months long, so it's shorter, but that counts as a positive.
I guess my biggest gripe here is that there's a lot of really cool stuff here. There's a lot of really moments where this band shines. There's some really great guitar riffs that I'm a big fan of. I'm a big fan of the guitar tone on this record as well. Yes. I'm also a big fan of the vocals. The vocals are kind of a combination of Rob Lowe and Lane Staley. And I know what you're thinking. Whoa, that's some huge fucking praise here. And while I wouldn't necessarily say that the vocalist or this vocal performance reaches the level that Lane or Rob reached at the highest of their high, I do think he's a huge credit to this band and is one of the main highlights. Sure. Main highlights. I mean,
he's the main songwriter. So,
well, credit to him. Credit to this band. But
yeah, this is.
This band just can't get out of their own way. They can't get out of their own way. Every single time you feel like we're getting back on the rails, they do something that, like, we're pulling back off the side of the road again. We've got another flat tire for 2 minutes.
I honestly feel like this record, the first few songs, they had something. And then the rest of the time, they were just kind of like, just throwing shit at the wall. And like, you know, these parts, we'll try and, you know, tape this and fucking glue this and it'll work, and it doesn't really work, and it's by far my biggest goddamn disappointment of 2023. Goddamn, this sucks.
And I know I keep hating on the female vocals, even though it is our boy, how much Glenn Cross's wife, Catherine Glenn Cross, who also plays the keyboard in this band, who is contributing the female vocals. I've not heard the first record of this band, so Richard says that the female vocals are much more appropriately combined in the first record than they are here.
Just also here. a lot less on the first record.
I'm not even necessarily like upset that they are as prominent. It's just that every single time that they show up here, for whatever reason, it just kills the momentum of the song. It's just the creative decisions that went into that surrounding the clean female vocals that kill the song.
Oh, of course. No, they're very well done. And it just sucks that they're not used appropriately. If you're used more, fine. Have them songs where it makes sense and it keeps things moving and it works. And more to this record.
And let's be honest here. Do you know how much it kills me to not like a record that has a bass player that goes by the name of Sasquatch Bob? Like, come on. What the fuck? How is that not a goddamn classic? 2.8 for me for distortions from God Thrim.
I'm going to give this, this is fucking tough, dude. This really is. Again, I really like this band. And again, if I got to see them live, I'd still be super stoked to see them. I probably never will because I live in America. But I'm going to give this a 2.6. And I kind of want to give it lower, but I'm hoping, you know, in a couple years, this sophomore summer, that they're actually a complete fucking banger that's going to blow this one out of the water. But yeah.
Distortions from God Thrim gets a 5.4 from us here at the Fundamentalist. That might be one of the lowest scores we have ever dished out here on the podcast. We're a very positive group of people. So you have to you have to do things to score less than a 6. We're looking at you, Hamish. We're looking at you.
All right, let's end on a positive note.
Yes, let's cleanse the fucking palate, shall we say.
Please do. Jesus.
Band that I'm a huge fan of, that I've been flying the banner for, singing the praises of, Mutoid Man. Mutoid Man comes to us from Brooklyn, New York. They've been around since 2012. Their last record came to us in the form of War Moans in 2017, modern day classic, as was their 2015 release, Bleeder. And now they are finally back 6 years later with their latest release entitled Mutants. Mutoid Man is made up of Ben Koehler, who is most known from being in Converge and Cave In, as well as Steve Brodsky, who was also in Cave In and was a live member of Converge as well. They also recently in 2021 added Jeff Matz from High on Fire. So what does this most recent record sound like? Well, it sounds a little bit like the other stuff, a little bit of a combination of stoner, sludge, heavy metal, rock, hardcore, a little bit of punk rock influence. If the uninitiated would say, it sounds like a skateboarder's heavy metal. And I think that's actually a pretty good way to describe it. Starting off with the very first track, Call of the Void, all the way through the final track, Setting Sun, there's the same vibe. There is a catchiness as well as a subtly complex guitar riffage that is persistent throughout the entire record. There is a subtle heaviness that is always just bubbling below the surface that also pops out that makes you just bang your goddamn head for about 15 to 20 seconds every now and then. I'm thinking of like the end of Frozen Hearts as well as Broken Glass Ceiling that comes through. But in each and every song, there's also a anthemic sing-along chorus, whether it's Call of the Void, Siren Song, or even the track number 8, Demons. There's something to love for, I think, every style of metalhead here, whether you're into like the fast, thrashy, skateboardy, like, you know, skate punk type of heavy metal, or if you want the sing-along chorus, or if you want the more hardcore tinge of things. I think there's something anybody can dive into here. Richard, I think this is your first time really diving into a Mutoid Man release. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Yes, it is. And this record really, like I said, it combines so many different genres, but it just kind of works. Like every song, I listened to this record about 3 times the past couple of days. And every time I caught something new, like all the songs are ridiculously catchy. It's a fairly short record, like maybe 37 minutes, 38 minutes, kind of like the Earthhouse record. So this is a little more upbeat. I have actual songs, you know, distinguish more, but it just really shines. Like, it's fun, too. Like, it's actually sexy, kind of a bit of an odd adjective, but it's just vibrant, like, full of life. Like, it really is.
No, sexy is a is an appropriate adjective. Like, lyrically, they kind of always kind of toe this line for some songs. Like on Bleeder, there was this War Moans, there was the track Date with the Devil, and Siren Song and Graveyard Love kind of follow in the footsteps of that.
Yes.
Lyrically, they're all over the place. Very relatable, I guess you could say, whether it be love or sex or any sort of how shall I put this? We'll clean out of the dead air. Mental masturbatory thoughts, whether it be death or loneliness or just longing for memory. What were you saying? Sorry,
I was a memory hole, a very 1984 influenced by the book that knows the lyrics and shit.
Yeah,
that obvious one there.
Yeah, like there's no, I guess, single hole you can place the band in lyrically. They do have a nice variety about them, which is, I think, adds to the relatability of the band. It's not like, you're listening to a death metal band where it's like death and dismemberment, or black metal where it's all about death and the devil. There's a lot going on here. Lyrically, the ideas are all over the place. And I think that can only help the band when it comes to trying to attract a varied audience, I guess you could say. And sonically, it's also quite varied. Even though I guess you could all say it's metal, you could also say it's hardcore. There's a little bit of punk influence in here as well. They do such a fantastic job of blending so many influences here. It's interesting. You could say that they are derivative in some way because they take influence from so many different influences, but it's hard for me to say that this band sounds like another band, or hard for me to say that another band sounds like Mutoid Man.
Sure. Yeah, like mine sound shut. The vocals, like at certain parts of the clean vocal, kind of remind me of almost like a more nasally Snake from Voivod, sometimes a little Dax from Acid Bath. Like it's these heavier parts, which is straight up like a hardcore, like actual metal core, like the late 90s, like super aggressive shit. So there's just always something going on, something different. They stay an idea, like they stay up an idea just to keep interesting enough, and they kind of go on to nothing. Almost in a way, almost like a grindcore. Like, it's an idea, cool, all the next thing. So they'll bring it back. And like grindcore, it's pretty much done on to the next thing. And 30 seconds later, you have a new song. So.
And let's actually talk a little bit about those vocals from Steve Brodsky. Steve Brodsky, also some of you may know from the 2 Minutes to Late Night YouTube channel. He is quite a mainstay on there. I know I've talked about it before here on this podcast, but his vocals are one, super clean at times, super poppy at times, but they can also be appropriately aggressive when they need to be, but not overly so. I think I was telling Richard in the Slack channel that he toes a really fine line, but he toes it very well. His vocals really complement the music, and they get really heavy when they need to be, and he fucking goes away when they need to be, when the music just needs to be fucking banging. And that's something this band does really well. There's the sections where the vocals totally go away and they just lets the music breathe. It lets the music be itself. It lets the band be itself. Very, very effective, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Actually, got to see Steve earlier this year. I saw Cave open up for Yah, but honestly, a lot of the Cave material they played, I kind of sound like this. It was a little more on the stonery, slower side. And other early shoots, a lot more aggressive, like your traditional hardcore, if you believe it. But honestly, the newer Cave stuff and this, I can see a lot of comparisons, a lot of like through lines between the two of them. So, but yeah, you can get pulled off live. So I can say that. So,
no shade to Mr. Brodsky, but did you see him off stage?
No, I was outside drinking. Honestly, I was just stoked for y'all. I wouldn't give a shit about the other opening fans, really.
I was taken aback at how tiny that man is. He must be. He must be 5'4", 5'5".
Oh, he is a wee little man. I'm not denying that.
It's like Frodo Baggins up on stage, fucking shredding. Sorry, dude. I love you. You're killer.
Hey, Sam, for goat or smaller dude, the man's got the riffs up top, taller fucking mountain. So, you know, height didn't necessarily mean that much deal, another small man, but a fucking legend, voice to sing that same fucking Valhalla. So,
obviously, the size of your internal metal credentials has got nothing to do with your height on the outside.
Fucking A right.
Anyway, back to Mutoid Man. Score Mutants from Mutoid Man gets a 4.1 from me.
I'm going to do a 3.9. Pretty cool record. I'm definitely going to go back and check the other records just so you have a fun, like, just record felt alive. And I was kind of, that might not make sense, but it just, a lot of shit going on. Really, really fucking good as a first time fan.
Well, I gave this record a 4.1, which means, and you gave it a 3.9, which means Mutants for Mutoid Man gets an 8.0, a good score.
Yeah.
However, I think this is their third best record out of four. War Moans and Bleeder are fucking phenomenal records. I would say that they're both nine plus. Especially War Moans. Just phenomenal. I'm not sure they'll overtop War Moans. And then there's this track called Bridge Burner that's on Bleeder that is, as well as Reptilian Skin, two of their best songs ever. Man, I could just bloviate about this band for a really long time. Definitely go back and check out their back catalog. This is not their best record by any stretch of the imagination. Wow, and it's really good. It's good, yeah, but definitely killer. Not their best.
Yeah. I'm definitely keeping an eye out since I love Bear Mass. See if they play shows right here. There's Steve's from around here. So definitely see them live for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Take advantage of that Northeast metal scene, dude. You got a beer and bag at the right places, you know?
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Well, thank you all for listening to this edition of the Fundamentalist Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the reviews and the news that we brought to you here. If you have any opinions about what we talked about today, be sure to send us an email at thefundamentalistpodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave us a review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, feel free to talk to us on Instagram or at Facebook at the Fundamentalist Podcast as well. We would love to hear from you. Richard, say goodbye.
Goodbye, listeners. Thanks for keeping up with us this year. This year has been a bit of a, you know, Pete leaving, and it's been a bit of a busy year, but we do promise more consistent going forward. So kind of getting the momentum back, so to speak. We appreciate y'all staying along for the ride. the ups and downs and everything else in between.
My name is Dual Guest, and thank you all for listening to this edition of the Fundamentalist Podcast. We'll speak with you later.